Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the Tech Meme Ride Home for Monday, June 25th, 2018. I'm your host, Brian McCullough. Today, new noise-canceling AirPods might be coming, AT&T buys App Nexus, more Trump and Chinese tech rumblings, and what is the future of benchmark capital? Here's what you missed today in the world of tech. As one of the tech meme editors joked on Slack this morning, Mark Gurman did his Monday thing again. In Bloomberg this morning, Gurman did his usual Apple rumor drop, this time relating to AirPods. According to Gurman, next year, 2019, Apple will unveil some high-end EarPods, which will be over-the-ear wireless headphones with noise cancellation and water resistance. It's also possible that some biometric sensors could be coming to the AirPods someday, something like a heart rate monitor. And Apple is also working to increase the range with which AirPods can work away from an iDevice. With an over-the-ear design and noise canceling, these new EarPods would compete with high-end earphones from the likes of Bose and Sennheiser. But Gurman believes they will be Apple-branded, so they'll also be competing with higher-end devices from Apple's own Beats headphone lineup. And these will definitely be higher-end, as Gurman believes they will definitely come in at a higher price point than the current $159 that the existing AirPods go for. But Gurman says the existing AirPod lineup will be refreshed this year with a new chip and support for hands-free Siri activation. Oh, and Gurman says that a new version of HomePods could be coming as early as next year as well. More moves on the consolidation chessboard today. AT&T confirmed this morning that it will buy App Nexus for an undisclosed amount of money. App Nexus is a programmatic advertising marketplace that competes with the likes of Google and Facebook. In fact, it's one of the biggest competitors to those two for certain types of ads. App Nexus says that it helps 34,000 publishers and 177,000 brands connect ads with ad inventory and audiences. But they also have some robust ad tech, which is essentially the myriad ways audiences can be sliced and diced and delivered to. It's all about allowing advertisers to hyper-target ads to very, very specific audiences, i.e. specifically you. So think of what AT&T can do with AppNexus. They just bought Time Warner, of course, so there's a ton of content that they can now monetize in a better, more modern way. And think about how much they know about the approximately 170 million subscribers they have to their various voice and data products. By purchasing one of the biggest ad players not named Facebook or Google, AT&T is positioning itself to become perhaps the third big digital ad alternative besides those two. AT&T's CEO Brian Lesser said in a statement, quote, "Ad tech unites real-time analytics and technology with our premium TV and video content. So we went out and found the strongest player in the space. AppNexus has scale of infrastructure, advanced technology, and diverse talent. The combination of AT&T advertising and analytics and AppNexus will help deliver a world-class advertising platform that provides brands and publishers a new and innovative way to reach customers in the marketplace today." The Trump administration is, according to the Wall Street Journal, considering new rules to block firms with greater than 25% Chinese ownership from buying U.S. firms with, quote, industrially significant technology. The new rules will reportedly be announced by the end of the week and may come in tandem with other new rules that will block some technology exports to China. The journal writes, the White House intends to use a national security rationale to justify these new actions, just as the recent steel and aluminum tariffs were recently put into effect on national security grounds. This allows the administration to act unilaterally without needing to get authorization from Congress. The president has made clear his desire to protect American technology, said Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross in a statement to the Wall Street Journal. quote, all possibilities that would better protect American technology, including potential changes to export controls, are under review, end quote. This will largely affect tech companies, which is why we're talking about it, but there are also growing concerns that the administration's actions against China could have a blowback effect on U.S.-based technology firms as well. The administration is reportedly finalizing around $250 billion in tariffs on Chinese imports on items including batteries, capacitors, and touchscreens. Quoting from a piece about this in The Verge, that looming trade war has particularly severe consequences for gadget startups. Often born out of crowdfunding campaigns, these companies have typically played American demand against Chinese manufacturing know-how, focusing on emerging products like smartwatches, VR controllers, and the Internet of Things. The incoming tariffs make that approach both riskier and less profitable, potentially requiring an entire industry to rethink where it makes its goods. Everyone's thinking about it, and what's a solution that's sustainable and legal, says NEMA CEO Shireen Yates. Her company, which manufactures a portable gluten tester, is a prime example of the kind of small hardware venture that could suffer as trade barriers go up. Our distributors are thinking about it. Everyone in the supply chain is aware of it. It's too early, but the uncertainty of it is daunting, end quote. Making the iPhone more expensive is one thing. Apple seems to feel that it has the ability to shield its supply chain, and probably Amazon and others do as well. But the concern is for smaller companies and startups, like the ones just mentioned. The fear is that without access to bespoke manufacturing processes, you could see a freeze develop in the truly innovative side of the gadget ecosystem. Certainly for some components, you could easily locate sources in other countries, but the main sticking point is for components for which there is high demand. And specifically, there seems to be a lot of concern over capacitors. I'll leave you with this quote from Sean Chang, a vice president at a manufacturing consulting firm called Dragon Innovation. Quote, everything from Tesla cars to the Internet of Things devices we use every day to our cell phone, all of it is eating up capacitors enormously. It's really hard to buy capacitors right now, and it doesn't help to have 25% tariffs on top of that.
What do you call an endpoint security product that works perfectly but makes users miserable? You call it a failure. The old approach to endpoint security is to lock down employee devices and roll out changes through forced restarts, but it just doesn't work. IT is miserable because they've got a mountain of support tickets, employees start using personal devices just to get their work done, and executives opt out the first time it makes them late for a meeting. You can't have a successful security implementation unless you work with end users. That's where Collide comes in. Their user-first device trust solution notifies users as soon as it detects an issue in their device and teaches them how to solve it without needing help from IT. That way, untrusted devices are blocked from authenticating, but users don't stay blocked. Collide is designed for companies with Okta, and it works on macOS, Windows, Linux, and mobile devices. So if you have Okta and you're looking for a device trust solution that respects your team, visit collide.com/ride to watch a demo and see how it works. That's KOLIDE.com/ride. In 2023, just 10 vulnerabilities accounted for over half of the incidents responded to by Arctic Wolf's incident response. Wouldn't you like to know how to take them off the table and make life more difficult for cybercriminals? That's just one of the essential insights you'll find inside the Arctic Wolf Lab's 2024 Threats Report. Authored by their elite team of security researchers, data scientists, and security development engineers, and backed by the data gained from trillions of weekly observations with thousands of unique environments, this report offers expert analysis into attack types, root causes, top vulnerabilities, TTPs, and more. Discover the attack vector behind nearly half of all successful cybercrimes, why ransom demands climbed 20% from 2023, and find out why 2024 will be an especially volatile year for cybersecurity. Learn more and get your copy now at arcticwolf.com/techmeme. That's arcticwolf.com/techmeme.
Speaking of Chinese and American tech competition, the U.S. has officially become home to the world's fastest supercomputer, taking the title from a Chinese computer. China has had the world's fastest supercomputer since 2013, but it has been supplanted by IBM's 200 petaflop Summit supercomputer housed at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Inside 5,600 square feet of cabinet space, the Summit has 27,648 Volta Tensor Core GPUs and 9,216 CPUs and can perform 200 quadrillion floating point operations per second, flops. The title for the world's fastest supercomputer used to belong to the 93 petaflop Sunway Taihu Lite. The list of fastest computers in the world is compiled by the Top 500 Project, and while the U.S. holds the crown right now, that doesn't mean that the Chinese are ceding the field. Far from it, in fact. China has more machines in the global Top 500 than the U.S., and the gap is widening. China now has 206 of the fastest supercomputers in the world, up from 201. The U.S. only has 124 on the list, down from 143. But it's all good news for NVIDIA, no matter how you slice it. If you know your chip makers, then you know that NVIDIA makes the Tensor Core GPUs, and NVIDIA chips power 5 of the machines in the top 7. Recode has an interesting piece up about Benchmark Capital. Benchmark is in the midst of raising its next fund, likely to be in the range of $425 million, like most of its other funds. But questions have been swirling about changes at one of Silicon Valley's most respected and successful VC firms. There have been questions about generational change, questions about strategic change, questions about a change in focus. And all this comes at an inflection point for the firm, which endured a brutal year last year involving the drama at Uber, one of Benchmark's biggest investment wins of all time. What my firm and I went through in 2017 was probably the least enjoyable experience of my life, said Benchmark's Bill Gurley in February. The Recode piece speculates that Gurley, who's largely seen as the face and de facto leader of Benchmark, will probably sign on for another 10-year fund, though since he's currently 52, that would mean that Gurley would be managing that fund into his 60s. Benchmark has something of an unwritten tradition that general partners start to fade into the background a bit once they reach their 60s. And as the Recode piece notes, Benchmark's deal-making pace has slowed considerably over recent years. Benchmark did 39 new deals in 2018 and just 7 last year. In the era of SoftBank's $100 billion Vision Fund, in the age of competing with sovereign wealth funds for deals, all of VC is reconsidering where it fits in the fundraising ecosystem. So it's probably logical that Benchmark is too at this point. And of course, there's the whole Uber brouhaha to consider. By essentially pushing Travis Kalanick out of his company, has Benchmark gained a reputation as being founder unfriendly, or is Uber thought of as a special unique case? In some circles, I think Benchmark is seen as having done what it had to do to protect its investment. Recode notes that Benchmark has already sold $900 million of Uber stock, which is enough on its own to have doubled the most recent fund's value. If you're not familiar with Benchmark, they made early investments in companies ranging from Uber, of course, and Zillow, and Twitter, and Snap, among many, many others. The firm was founded in 1995, right at the dawn of the web era. And its early investment in eBay is considered by a lot of people to be among the best VC calls of all time. But they were also around for the dot-com era, so they made a lot of dot-com investments that didn't work out, including a particularly star-crossed investment in Webvan. Speaking of long-read suggestions, if you've never read the book eBoys, look it up. Author Randall Strauss spent a year embedded in Benchmark's offices as a fly on the wall right at the height of the dot-com mania. It's really an amazing read. I'll put a link to that book, eBoys, in the show notes. Finally today, no doubt you've noticed that more and more restaurants are increasingly deploying tabletop tablets to not only allow you to peruse the menu, but actually make orders and pay up right on screen. Super great, right? Super convenient. But what about from the other side of this equation? Is it making life easier for servers and waitstaff as well? Not so much. There's a story in BuzzFeed about Ziosk tablets, which have been added to dining tables at more than 4,500 restaurants across the U.S. You've seen them in places like Chili's and Olive Garden and TGI Fridays. And there's a competing company called E La Carte that has a tablet system called Presto Prime that's in more than 1,800 restaurants. The problem for servers is that on both of these platforms, after you complete your order, you're asked to rate your server's service. And companies are increasingly tying the ratings your waiter gets to his or her pay or even ability to work shifts. See your ratings drop, and suddenly you might find yourself left off the schedule. Waitstaff complain that they are having to endure a deluge of inaccurate rankings, unfair scores, and even inappropriate comments that diners leave. As the piece says, quote, Ziosk and Presto sit at the nexus of two major consumer trends. The idea that every product, service, piece of content, and interaction, whether encountered online or in real life, should be rated on a scale of 1 to 5, and that these ratings in aggregate become an invaluable data set, helping managers achieve growth and make money. Technologies like Ziosk are attractive to the restaurant industry, which faces a rising minimum wage, because the tablets promise to make workers more efficient and in turn lower labor costs. But in interviews with BuzzFeed News, more than 24 current and former servers described Ziosk as a source of financial and emotional anxiety, a vector of discrimination and harassment in the workplace, and an added layer to the economic and psychological precariousness that already defines restaurant work, end quote. So yeah, on the one hand, it's about making things more efficient, right? Better ratings for better service. But as the piece points out, it creates a world, a la Uber ratings and the like, where anything less than 5 stars can essentially be counted as an insult. If you've seen that episode of Black Mirror where everyone walks around with 5-star scores hovering above their head that are affected by every interaction and thereby create essentially a walking hell where every minute you're walking on eggshells, terrified of even mildly annoying anyone. Yeah, this is like that. As one server says in the piece, quote, the way the scoring system works is flawed. The only way they can get a good score is if someone puts highly satisfied. Unless they get that, they don't get a good score. Another server said, quote, satisfied should not be considered a bad score, but that drops you down 10% immediately, end quote. Worth a read and worth remembering, a good rule of thumb for going through life is to just always give service workers of every stripe the benefit of the doubt. Unless they do something truly egregious, how would you like it if every action at your job was evaluated minute by minute? Of course, read the piece. Maybe that's where we're all headed. Hey, you want to rate my job? I actually encourage it, especially if you want to try to bury some of the bad reviews I get occasionally. Rate and review the Tech Meme Ride Home on iTunes, Google Podcasts, wherever. Oh, and a quick plug for my other podcast, the Internet History Podcast. On this week's episode, I have an interview up with someone I've been dying to talk to for years now, Netscape's Roseanne Sino. Want to hear a real fly on the wall slash bird's eye perspective of the first ever web startup? Check out the latest episode. Again, that's the Internet History Podcast. And lastly, shout out to listener Imran Haider in Pakistan, who, if he hears this, is just now starting his morning workout. Hope it was a good one, Imran.